I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. I'm Amy Stevenson. We have a great guest today. His name's Rob Leese. And if you've ever wondered what it's like to be on a horse in a movie, then Rob's worked on films like Robin Hood, War Horse, BBC's Merlin, as well as many others. He's learned his techniques being in Australia, and what's fascinating is his view on problems with horses and how he comes up with solutions. It's a view I haven't heard before, and I'm sure you'll find fascinating. Plus, he gives us some advice on if you've got issues loading your horse, any problems that you might face. Rob's here to help us out. I hope you enjoy listening to Rob share some of his stories and his experiences. This is Horse Hour. Welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. We've got a little bit of a superstar with us today. His name's Rob Leese. You will know him from Robin Hood and War Horse. He got to be the really cool guy that rides the horses in the mega movies. Rob, how are you?
Hiya. How you doing?
You are like every guy's dream. When we talk to men and they talk about going horse riding, they forget about the whole behaviour and starting from the beginning. And they're like, I want to be a stuntman because that's cool.
Yeah, being a stuntman would be cool. I work in the horse department, so we do get onto some stunts, but we're not stuntmen. The stuntmen do many different jobs, but mainly we're the horse department that work on all the horse scenes in most films that are out at the moment.
So being part of the horse department then is you're making sure, I'm guessing, that the horses are well cared for, that they're not overworked.
Yes, and riding in scenes, fight scenes. We're still in the action, but we wouldn't be doing all the falls as much, and but we're still galloping past all fires, fighting on horseback, yes.
So what did you do in War Horse?
War Horse, there's a battle that we come up to with a machine gun and we all get shot and we're on the floor as well. So, yeah, a lot of horses got shot going up into the woods there. So there was a machine gun at the top.
That must be quite... I mean, you've been doing this a long time, haven't you?
Yeah, started in, I think, 2009. Robin Hood was the first film that we did. And a lot of fight scenes in that, galloping in and through fire and all sorts going on there. 2009 that was, and that came out 2010, and then from there progression wise, I got another phone call and went off and did Merlin for the BBC, which was I did 3 years on that, and I did Bradley James's body double.
Oh wow!
For all the riding scenes that he did for, I think it's about two to three seasons. That was great.
Well, that's the best way, isn't it? Because you get to be in the movies, you get to have fun with your horses, but you don't have all the stress of being famous and paparazzied and all that kind of. You're anonymous, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, it is great. I did do a movie that came out last year that actually got a bit of acting in, which was great.
What was that called?
It's a B-rated movie, but it was called In the Name of Ben-Hur, which I play a character called Dio, which I actually got to do my own fight scenes in the movie on the horseback and off the horseback. And I played different characters as a body double as well on that. So I was very busy. So I had to act, ride, do some former stunts with whips, which was great for this B-rated movie. It was really, really good job.
It sounds like the best job in the world. You get to ride, have fun with horses all day. And can you what were your scenes? What did you have to say? Did you have words?
Yeah, I did have words. what was they? Just trying to think. There was...
Now, come on, you've got to do it properly. Do it in the as though you were on set.
Oh, you just chucked it straight at me. All right, okay. There's a fight scene where I whip one of the ladies off the horse, and then I stab her with a spear. Oh. And then I say, if you want her to live, we want Ben her, not this other character. And it's just, you have to watch the movie because it's really hard to just put it all out. It's just such a while ago now. But basically, I stab the lady, and I want Ben her. I don't want anyone else because they're not important.
Oh, no. See, there was me thinking, when you said I'm going to whip the lady off the horse, I was thinking, oh, it's going to be amazing. And then he's going to kiss her and it will be just lovely. But no, you stab her, Rob.
That's correct. I'm a complete thug in it. And I just rip her off the horse and basically tell her, we want Ben Hur. If not, I'm going to kill you all, basically.
Well, this is the movie stuff that you do is kind of on the sideline to your everyday learning, building behavior with horses, isn't it?
Yes. That's how I first started, how I got into the sort of film side was through sports, really. And someone saw me riding a bit of a joust at one of the shows, and they said, oh, we'll give him a call one day, and if we've got a movie coming up, and we'll see if he can come ride for us. And that's how I got on. They saw me ride at a show, as a county show, and they went, right, we'll take that fella on and see if he can come and do some stuff. And then from then onwards, you just got a phone call, a phone call, a phone call all the time, and you're out working every day. And I don't until I come back and wanted to carry on with my own work.
What made you not want to do the movie stuff so much?
It is long hours. It's great. I do enjoy it, but it is long hours for us as people because, okay, the horses has not got as long hours as us at all. But you've got to get up in the morning, make sure everything's packed in the lorry. Or if you're going straight from where you are, you've still got to make a journey. It might be miles away. You might get a call. The horses have been there for a couple of days anyway. They've already settled. It's in the stables. But you might get a phone call. Well, you need to go up there for that weekend or that week. And you might be leaving at 3-4 o'clock in the morning to get up there. Mm. And it's quite short notice. For the riders, we get quite short notice to go and do these things.
Well, I can't give you much sympathy, Rob, if I'm honest, because it sounds far too exciting. And there are lots of grooms that get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and have to travel, and they don't even have the fun of being in a movie. But I do get that it's hard work, and we don't see the hard work. We just see the final thing. So.
Well, it's good fun. Don't get me wrong. It's great fun, and it's brilliant to do. But you do get some long hours. You just get tired. You get very sleepy. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, I get tired after riding for 3 hours, let alone having to ride for 15. No wonder.
Yeah.
So I guess that the nice thing is though. Well, the first thing is you're not riding your own horses, are you? You're riding other people's.
Yeah, different companies' horses. The main company I've been riding for at the moment is the Devil's Horseman. They are a great company to work for. I've really enjoyed working for them, and I've been working for them for a long time now, actually, off and on. The last couple of years more so, last 2 years.
Now, the Devil's Horsemen are the gorgeous men that you get at shows that get every lady hot under the collar, and they drag their husbands and their partners to these county shows saying, it's all about the horses. It's never about the horses. It's always about the Devil's Horsemen. That's what we go to watch.
Yeah, they are great. They're great. They're great showmen, and they're also great in with the films. They're good horses as well. It's great when you get a phone call from this company, you know that you're going to have a good time going out filming because the horses are great, very well trained.
So they do films as well, then? It's not just the displays that we see at the big shows.
No, the Devil's Horsemen are one of the biggest companies, I would say. So far, riding for them has been brilliant.
Amazing. Is it tough sometimes because you don't get to choose what horse you're on? I guess part of you is you trust those horses already. You know they're really, really well trained. But the other part is, oh, I could be on a crazy one today.
Well, not for the filming so much, because my work is literally I'm always riding horses that could potentially hurt me. So when I'm riding for a company like the Devil's Horsemen, those horses are bulletproof. You just get on them, you can go and do anything. I did a parade with them in London, and I was surprised. I thought, well, maybe something may spark them off or something, but no, they had all these runners running up and down, all the noises, a band going, big bangs, big noises in the middle of London, and these horses didn't flinch. They were just straight down the line. Great.
That's amazing.
And quite a lot of horses that day for that parade.
That's like our dream horse. A bomb-proof horse is everything that we aspire to have our horses to be like, but that's what you train, isn't it? You have your own company doing horsemanship too. Is it natural horsemanship? Yeah.
I wouldn't really call it that, because where I went to New Zealand, and I traveled a lot of New Zealand and Australia, and we didn't really call it that at all over there. They had certain horses that they used, especially in Australia, but in New Zealand we had certain things we had to do with those horses. There's a lot of land out there. So you have to be one-handed. So it's like a Western horsemanship in a way, but it's modified and made so we can try and bring what we do to every discipline. So it's not so much the natural horsemanship part. It's little bits of everybody's knowledge put together from everything to just be the best that I can put together, really. So it's not just – it's different trainers' methods. If you've got something good, I'll steal it.
It's the Rob Lee's way.
Yeah, so I mean there's so many ways out there, but there's about three or four different ways to catch a horse, maybe even more actually. There's loads actually, and I saw one the other day and I thought, well, that was quite an easy way of doing it, and I thought, well, it is bringing the skill level down, but I'll steal that, because what's happening now is that people, they have 9-to-5 jobs and they don't have the time to go out there and just learn something like lassoing, for example. They just don't have the time to use a rope or a lasso. So can you work a different way and catch a horse an easier way that's wild, with making it more English, and we've got stables here, not barns. So some horses are in stable. I've got one tomorrow to do. It's in a stable and you can't get anywhere near it. So is there an easier way so the client can actually have some homework and do so? Anything I see, I'm always trying to modify it to make it better for the owner and easier to understand. If it's hard for the owner, then they're not going to do it. So it's got to be easier each time. So I'm always looking for easier ways.
I like that. I guess we haven't really got a reason to lasso a horse, though, have we? I'd love to see it done.
Yeah, like that's the first thing I got taught when I was out there. It's lassoing, and I start looking at lassoing. I was thinking, well, there must be an easier way. It's great, don't get me wrong, because if you do it properly, but the skill set in the lasso, I've had ladies have a go just chucking it around, even lads having a go, and they get tied up with it, and it's all over the place. So I'm like, no, that's not happening. So there's another way that we do to catch wild horses that will make it so much easier, and so much easier for the person to not create any drama and make it more safe for them. So they'd go out and do it every day, so the horse is easier to caught and spend that time with them.
So what? Well, I really want to ask you, what is the technique?
I can't really show you the technique on here or say, but it's just an easier way of doing it. I mean, you've had a couple of lessons and with me, maybe then.
Because my next question is, where would there be wild horses that they would need to learn how to kind of catch a wild horse?
Funny you say that. On my Facebook, if you have a little scroll down, you'll see a load of cobs on there, gypsy type cobs that have been they got abandoned on one of the parks down in Oxford. It was tame, and I got a phone call from the police to go and round them up, and they were in 50 acres. On the parkland, which was about to, next couple of days was about to go underwater because it was near the river. So we had to go and get them off. So there was different ways that we had to catch them and get the vet down and get them into the pens and get them gone. So sometimes I do a bit of charity work here and there as well.
Gosh, did you catch them individually or did you catch them as a herd?
Well, it was seven stallions, and they actually split. So when we got out there, they would split into fours. Sorry, Yeah, there's a seven. I think they started at 10. I think they went down to seven. So three split off and four stayed together. So it was a bit difficult. So we had to make two areas for them to catch them in because they weren't sticking together. But as they were getting older, they were starting to separate a little bit.
Mm. And did you take your horses in with you or were you on foot?
Unfortunately, I was on foot because we couldn't even get anything, any equipment in there at all to catch them. No quads, no machinery at all. So it was all done on foot. And what made it hard was there was a forest in the middle, which they kept grouping and running into the forest, and there was nothing around them. But these horses don't respect fencing. They'll climb over it. They'll go through it. There's nothing you can do really fence wise, unless you're going to, 50 acres is a lot to fence in 2 days.
Yeah.
There was holes everywhere where these horses could just escape, and they were very fast. And yeah, we got the job done in that day, but they had already failed 2 weeks prior. They did it every day for 2 weeks apparently, and they failed every day. Give us a call and we got them in that day, but it was very difficult.
That's amazing. A very similar incident happened in Dorset about 3 years ago, but there were horses, it was 21 horses that were stranded on a flooded kind of plain.
Yeah.
And it took a month to get them off. A month. Yeah. And I'm like, come on. Like there were a few of us that were there to help. And I think it was difficult because the great guys that were trying to help there, that were running it, didn't actually know too much about what they were doing, and they were chasing the horses away rather than trying to round them up and bring them in. And sadly, they wouldn't listen to silly old little local equestrians that apparently didn't have a clue about horses. But I said to them at the time, there's people that we must be able to call that can go in and get them. And my initial thought was, I remember this video of it was in Norway, where these five people were on horseback. It was flooded, and over 100 horses were stranded on an island. So they took their five horses, they marched on into the island, and they herded 100 horses out, and they all went out in twos. It was amazing. Have you seen it on YouTube?
I've not seen it, but that. The best thing when you got anything like that is a decent sit down and have a good chat. Give everyone a job if you're going to be catching that amount of horses. The worst thing is you just turn up. Everyone's got their own idea. That's never going to work. You need to sit down, make a good plan. One person tell you like which is the best plan to go to, and stick with that. You're more likely going to win that way. But when you turn up with seven, eight ladies and a couple of lads that are husbands and they've all got their own agenda, it's never going to work. You choose one way and you'll get the job done at some time.
We were very lucky. There were some great charities there, and we got them rescued in the end. This video, I have to send it to you, is absolutely fascinating because the theory is that horses are herd animals. They follow other horses.
And yeah, definitely does happen. Like when I was in New Zealand, we used to round them up with horses, and Australia used to round them up with horses, and it was great fun. And it's a lot easier too. I like to have a couple of horses if it's doing that job. And we used to do it with the sheep too. Bring the sheep down. Used to use the horses.
I heard that some of the places in New Zealand, it can take you 2 weeks to get round the whole farm because it's so big.
I think it's more Australia.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, more Australia. New Zealand's not as big as Australia, but it's long, but it's a lovely place. Definitely recommend it. Where I was living is the North Island, but I travelled the North and South working from all the way down to Dunedin up.
Great. And so did you go over there to learn how to handle horses?
Yeah, basically what happened was my family, we got over 50 horses, my family have. And we always have at any time. Since I was a kid, we had about, I think, 52 cobs when I was about 12, 13. So my family went over and rescued a load from, I think, Bilf Wales show. The Bilf Wales market that was there, and they bought a load of cobs back, and they just kept taking the lorry back up there, picking them up, and we end up having fields full. And slowly we backed them and rode them and rehomed them, and yeah, that it was great. But then from cobs they went on to quarter horses and a couple of thoroughbreds and different breeds coming through there, section A, section B's, all sorts went through, horses to ponies. And how I got to go to New Zealand, we had one horse we couldn't get anywhere near. I think it was about three rising four. And we had 70 acres, so it was in one of the 25 acre paddocks, and couldn't get anywhere near him. This fellow that came over wanting to do some sports with his daughter, horses over here, just coming over as a trip, and he was a horse trainer himself, and you know, I was riding about 9-10 horses a day, hardcore, all the time. And this bloke's turned up, friends of one of the other lads that were living, helping running the farm at the time. He was from Ireland, and he was living on the farm, and he was one of his friends from New Zealand, and he said, I'll catch that horse if you want me to. So we built him a pen, and in some parts of me, I was like, I wanted to catch the horse, of course, because we want done, but other parts of me saying, I've failed, I didn't really want you to catch that horse. And he got it in the pen, and within sort of an hour he had a rope over it, and then he had the next day he had the halter on, and then the day three he was lunging it, and day four the saddle was going on, and it was quiet. And it, for me, I was just watching him, and the first hour was going by, and I was like, he hasn't quite caught it. So, but then he caught it, and everything was sweet. And he came up to me, and we actually have a video of that. And he came up and said, you liked what I did there, didn't you? And I did a little bit of a smirk on my face, and I went, yeah, I kind of did like that. And I said, yeah, I did. And he went, you can come back with me if you want and stay on the farm and if you want to.
Wow.
And I thought, well, actually, yeah, I will. So I went straight in, and I booked my ticket.
Oh, really?
I come out and I said, yeah, I booked my ticket. And he went, what? Back home? And he went, yeah, yeah. I said, I booked it. And he went, I better tell the wife. So he had to phone home and tell the wife that I was coming over to live. And I stayed over there for, I think, six, seven months for the first time. I came back, and then their daughters came back over to carry on the sport with me. So I was getting trained by the daughters as well, because they were trained up by him, and they carried on the training when I was back home. And then I went back over there. I went over there three times, backwards and forwards, just following the sun round, really.
God, it's amazing. What's his name?
Tokri, his name is, from New Zealand.
And he's worked with horses forever, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think he started off doing a bit of driving on the farm. I'm just not 100% sure, but I think he started off doing driving and, you know, working the farm. Mm. And he's always worked the farm with the horses. And then from then onwards, he went over to Australia to a horse trainer over in Australia that was taught by Tom Dorrance, a big name there for the horse training world in the States, by Tom Dorrance. And so it's got Tom Dorrance background and Bill Dorrance to it.
So what was it that you liked so much about his style?
What did I like? Well, I used it because at the time I was playing a lot of mounted games, which is the Pony Club games, but for the adults at the time. Mm. And I saw some of the training methods that could really work for that. And at the time I was a good rider. I was pretty good, but I was winning here and there. And then I went over there, and within a year, it did take a little while, don't get me wrong, as any training did. It took a year and a half, 2 years to see results in my horses at home. And then within that, we won the 4 years champions, all 4 years in a row. We were undefeated. We end up going to the World Equestrian Games.
Oh my gosh, how do I not know this?
Yeah, so it was for the sport we were doing brilliant. We were just undefeated and world champion for the pairs with my team rider D, which he's a farrier now over in New Zealand. So yeah,
and he's given it up. So he's this unbelievable rider, but he's not riding.
I don't know if he's completely given it up, but just say we're not as quick as we used to be with that sport. We have to be out running every day, and we don't run as much as we used to. So it's a lot of work goes into that sport,
and a lot, like you're saying, of the behaviour and the relationship that you have with the horses.
Correct. But we had massive results in it. We were doing so well at one point that we actually gave up because we were that far in front that there wasn't anyone challenging us in the end, that we just had to say, look, enough's enough, because we're going to shows we already knew we were winning. So it actually became a bit sad, really, because, you know, you go to shows going, well, there was no one to take us on at that time. and we sort of professionalised it in the riding side.
Do you reckon there'd be people that could take you on now?
Oh yes, I'll be slower now, but I'd have to go out running. I'm on the wrong side. You need to be under 20 for that.
Oh, really?
yeah, you do. That's a hard sport because you're vaulting on horses, and the horses are getting they're quick animals, and you're going as fast as your body can take you. I mean, there was sometimes you were jumping off them, your feet just felt like air. It was like walking on water before you're just getting back on them. It was that quick.
Your balance.
I can still do the old vault. I was out in in Norway. And I was vaulting horses in Norway. There's a video on Facebook of me vaulting, and I think on YouTube as well.
Oh, yeah, you're brilliant with your videos. You're putting videos out all the time. But now you've moved on to more horsemanship techniques. So now it's about how to solve problem horses, isn't it?
Yeah, through that, the games gave me the speed and the eye-hand coordination at a fast level. So you get to see things happening before they happen. Because with horses, we all know that when something goes wrong, it happens very quickly. Horses, it's bang, it happens. So it gives you a good eye. But also, you've competed quite high with your horses. And so you've created a bit of a bond with them, and you know what the levels are of each horse. And I've ridden so many that it has helped. It's every horse I get on now. You don't get that feeling where you get on a new horse and you think, oh, this feels really weird. I don't get that so much now. I get on a horse and I'm ready to go. And it just feels normal to me. It's just... It's not like getting in a car and going, oh, that feels weird and this feels... No, you get on it and straight away you're into it. It doesn't feel like that for me anymore.
What, even a thoroughbred compared to a Friesian? It's got to feel a little bit odd.
Oh, you know it's different, but you don't get that, oh, this feels really... You know that feeling?
Yeah.
You feel smaller and you think, oh, I'm not quite sure about this. No, I don't get that. So, hey, let's go. This is something finer or something a bit stockier. Yeah, it doesn't matter so much now.
So your confidence then, you can pretty much ride anything.
Well, as long as it's got 4 feet, yeah.
Oh my God, please tell me, how do you get to that stage? Because my confidence is shocking. I can't get on anything and ride it. I'm nervous most of the time, to be honest.
Well, that's actually a good thing to ask, really. The main thing is, because I'm training in my technique, working them all the time to how I would like them to go. That's part of it, because they're actually, I'm working with them. I know when I get on a horse, I always, if it's not mine, I always ride it how it already rides. But when I'm making a horse and backing a horse, I'm creating it to be molded to me, and we're building up a relationship as we go. So we don't really have this confidence problem.
But I'm doing that, but it's not working. So I'm building, we're trying to go through this, me and Blackjack, trying to go through this journey together. And it's been an eventful journey, Rob, I'll be honest. You know, we've had ups, we've had downs, we've had, he's been retired because he had an injury, he's come back into work. And so now we're going back through the learning process. It's just he's a little bit older. My confidence is really bad, although to be fair, I have built it up quite well. I'm getting better. And his confidence is getting better, but it takes so long. You have to have so much patience, which is fine. But there are a lot of spooks, a lot of turns, a lot of scary flapping bags around, and the wind and the rain. And it would be so lovely to just get on a horse and not have any worries. So how do we get our horses to that level?
Well, there is a lot of training, and you have to come up with the idea. You have to think, right, okay. My horse is worried about all these issues. Let's go out and face those issues straight away. Like for me, wind. Everyone puts their horses away when there's a bit of wind. Me, I'm like, okay, I don't enjoy it. Don't get me wrong, because it's cold or whatever. I put another jacket on and I'm out there with the horse in the wind. The horse shouldn't know any different if you've got the confidence to push them through those things. So when I'm training the young horse... I'm like, there's wind, we're going to go and tackle. I'll be out there in a storm, I will be. If the horse has got an issue, and I'll be out there working it through that. And we'll come out on the sunny day. We'll come out and it will be sunny.
Well, I've been determined to not be a fair weather rider. And we did go out in the wind and rain the other day, because I thought, well, the only way he's going to get used to it is if if we go through it. But it was hairy. It was quite scary at times, because I've got to be good enough to be able to get him through those tough times too.
Yeah, that is true. I don't recommend people go out there and jump on them and ride them through the wind and rain if they haven't got any confidence about doing so. But you shouldn't be dodging the weather if you've got a horse that needs training. Especially for trainers, you should be going, right, okay, let's drive through that. If there's bad weather or if there's this or that, you've just got to go through it and get the confidence up on them. Mm. If you aren't confident, then probably ask somebody that is confident to take them through those stages.
Yeah, I do have a lovely girl that's really confident, so she rides him 3 times a week so that he doesn't pick up any bad habits from me, because they say horses are like their owners, and I'm slightly eccentric and crazy, so I don't really want him to be like that.
Yeah, no, that's a good thing to talk about, really, because we have there's some horses that I get on, I'll get a phone call and they'll say, he's not doing this, he's not doing that, and you look at it and you start working out what's going on, and actually you get on and ride them and they're like electric in the hands for the first 5-10 minutes, and they feel like they're going to spook every time, and you think, where's this coming from? And it catches you sometimes and you go, what are we jumping at? And there's nothing here. And it's because the person's been riding it, and a lot of it is they've ridden behind the movement and they've got themselves a little bit off balance when there is a spook, or and haven't corrected the spook, or they've just got off when there's a problem every single time, and the horse starts to get a bit nervous itself and doesn't have the confidence, and then it creates this electric through the reins, and you get on them, and I get it all the time, and I think, cool, that there's a lot of bite in those reins, and it's getting a bit worried all the time, and it's a bit like a shake. You might not even see it. You wouldn't be able to see it to the eye, but you can feel it through the hands. Mm. And through the saddle, of course. You feel every shake in them. And it's trying to get them back, and I do 10-15 minutes on the horse, and the horse is back to where it was square one, but then it's about explaining this to the client and saying, look, you know, this is what's actually happening. It's not that you've got a bad horse. Actually, so-and-so sold you a good horse. And what's happened is over time, your confidence has been lacking. And then the horse has responded like this because you haven't got the confidence to push him past something. Now, some horses are very smart. And if they're not worried, they'll just turn around and go home and take the mickey some way. Other horses that are still good may actually just pick up on that and get scared, and an owner may have sold that horse, and actually the new owner has accidentally put this on the horse, and it's trying to find when I go out. This is why I do consultations. I'll go out, I'll check the facilities, check the owner, check the horse, and it may need even 2 times for me to suss out everything that's going on there. But normally on the first run of a consultation, I figured out what kind of owner she is or he is, what kind of problems it's been going through, because sometimes it's, well, 90% of the time it's not actually the horse. Mm. It's the owner has said, he doesn't do this, he doesn't do that, I'm worried to ride him because he spooks all the time, he's scared of this, he's scared of that. You get on him and you're like, oh, right, I can feel that in the first 15, 20 minutes, but actually he's come down and he's quite nice. Mm-hmm. So what's going on? And people, clients or people get into horses for so many different reasons. And you've got to figure out, why did they get into horses? And sometimes you'll find and follow through their background that they've bought a horse, and it might be that actually their relationship isn't going very well. So there's more to it in my work than just
yes. They want that love, they want that and they want that affection back, which means that I guess psychologically they could feel quite rejected if the horse isn't doing what they're asking it to do.
Well, many different things you'll come across. You might have that husband and wife aren't getting on. She's bought a horse and she just wants to be away from him, and she's putting it all on that horse. But she's also nervous, so and there's lots of things and pieces of the puzzles to put together. And as a trainer, you will get everything comes out with us, because you can see it. You can see if that owner's had a bad day at work, or they don't even want to be at that job anymore, it all come out, and they come after work or come after whatever they've been doing during the day. And if they've had a bad day, they'll put it all on their horse. Mm. You can see, you start putting things together, and sometimes it's not always it's not always what it cracks up to be. It might not even be a training thing. It might be sitting down and just talking to them and saying, what's going on here? You know, because this has progressed from being a good horse, because you've shown me it's a good horse, so that the other owners said it's a good horse, and what's happened is this has happened, and all this blame has come out, but really there's just some truth behind it. I mean, that's just one thing that's happened over a couple of times over time, but it's many different reasons why the horse can be having problems.
So are you a counsellor as well then?
Well, that's it. I mean, you do actually get to that stage. And I mean, I've had people ring me up at 2 o'clock in the morning and 3 o'clock in the morning. Rob, I just needed to talk to you.
And you answer?
Well, sometimes you do, because you think, oh, maybe somebody's hurt themselves, or a family member, and you wake up, hello. And I just needed to ask you a question. And you're like, what's the question? Do you think it'd be right to take my horse out tomorrow? And you're like,
that would be me. Granted, I wouldn't call you at 2 o'clock in the morning, but I do, because I like to check, and ultimately it's nice that they look to you for that kind of safety net. You're like that parent holding their hand, and they want to do it. I say they, okay, I can only talk from my personal experience, but I want to know that I'm doing okay, and I'm learning, and I'm listening, and I'm taking on board everything that you say, but you know. I, as a rider, I'm learning, I don't know. So sometimes we just need that extra check. Granted, I wouldn't phone at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, please, people, don't phone at that time. Unless there's a real accident, or there's something that really needs to be said. But there's many reasons. I mean, that if you just get down to the loading, the loading itself, loading is a big one across any trainer that does horsemanship styles. Is loading difficulties. Now, loading difficulties, is so many different reasons for loading. I can name a couple of them.
Go on, talk me through some.
Okay, so they buy a horse for the daughter. This can be a case. The horse is not loading anymore. It's laying down, or it's just laying down in the trailer, or there's some problem. You go there, you jump in the back, and you shouldn't really get in the back with them, but you ask them to take you for a spin once you get the horse in there. And you figure out, actually, the horse is just doing the very, very clever thing. Every time there's a bend that turns up, they just sit down, and because they're going to fall over. Now you start to realize that people haven't actually taken a course in how to drive horses in a trailer. And when you come up to a junction, you should stop and then go round. But they think that going round a roundabout really fast is a smoother experience for a horse, or to cut the corner in a junction just to make it smoother. No. And then a sharp bend, they think they're going to be driving nice and smooth at a certain speed, and they just do that. Well, the horse doesn't know, and off they go. They need to learn how to drive horses. It's not the same as just driving a trailer empty. They've got 4 feet, and you have to realize. And that's just one case. And then they think, why is the horse not loading? Well, there's the reason. Normally, the reason why the horse won't go on the ramp is there's something in front of it that's stopping it. And people go, well, you know, it's fine going out of the field. It walks everywhere else. But as soon as I put it up to the ramp, it will stop. It doesn't want to go on. And that could be down to many things. Fitness is a massive one for me. And people go, what do you mean fitness? Well, the last time you traveled it out, you took it, you put it on the trailer. It traveled an hour or two in the trailer. I traveled an hour or two to get home. But then you worked it at the competition and show. It's a green horse and it's really, really tired. That's when I get a phone call and say they're stuck at the show, because the horse just goes, I just can't do anymore.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
And it just shuts down. But the people don't understand this, that these things happen. I mean, that's just another one. That's just another very common one for green horses, where instead of taking them to the show and let them see everything and then put them back on later on, they get a better result. Not working them really, really hard. There's also, as you say, fair weather riders that will only go 20 minutes down the road once in a blue moon. Now, that's horse goes out and gets very, very tired, and that's what we call a sticky loader. And the sticky loaders are horses that have travelled only 10 to 20 minutes to the local shows, and you get a lot of that. And they just go, I don't really want to go, because when I get on there, I go do 2 hours worth of work or a day outing. Mm-hmm. I'm not really. They're not fit enough, and then they're not ready for this. So that's another one. So
how do we overcome a sticky loader then? Because we don't want to go out for, well, yeah, it would be lovely to go on holidays and things. But truth is, I don't have time to take my horse for holidays. I don't even get a holiday. You know, my time is spent taking my horse out for the day. But also, I don't want to spend 4 hours in the lorry. You know, I don't want him to spend 4 hours in the lorry. So going somewhere down the road would be quite nice. How do I get him to enjoy that experience more?
Well, to start off, how to get it better at the beginning was, when you first put the horses on the trailer, is really critical. So if they've never been loaded up before in their life, that's the best time when to get it, really. And for me, I would put a horse on the trailer or when I'm training, or a lorry, and I wouldn't go for 5 minutes down the road. I wouldn't go for 10 minutes down the road, 20 minutes. And you get a lot of people training this technique. Well, I'll just go around the corner and give them a small little drive. Hang on, if I was scared of a roller coaster, you stuck me on there only for 5 minutes, do you think I'm going to get back on it? No. But if you stuck me on that roller coaster all day long, and I was happy and I stopped sweating, and then you let me off, I'll be all right about it, because I got over it. But that's what ends up happening when they're green and young. They stick them on and only do 20 minutes. They get them off. They get dragged off the other end. They're dripping in sweat, and they've had a hell of a time. That's not a good experience. So the best time when you're first teaching them to load is to go for a longer distance.
Oh, interesting. And what about if you've had a horse that already has loaded, but now maybe won't load so much?
Yeah, well, fitness, again, is really important. It's not this, oh, I just want to go show tomorrow and do it once in a blue moon and just try and fix it that way. No, you've got to train your horse now. You've got a loading issue. You're always going to have a sticky loader if you don't get onto it and start going, right, okay, find out why. I mean, I can only tell you, there could be many reasons. So it could be many reasons, even for sticky loading. Mm-hmm. It might be actually they don't like being in there because they're claustrophobic. There could be so many different reasons. But if the horse was just sticky because he just didn't want to do a job at the upper end, then you're going to have to build his fitness up at home. And you should do anyway. You shouldn't be going to shows unfit and just dragging them out of the field and chucking them on once in a blue moon. It's not really fair for any horse to do that. Mm-hmm. You should be at some level with them. I would recommend anyone going to a show and being
no yeah yeah so should is it something that you should do every day, or is it something that you should do once a week, or can once a month be okay?
What, loading?
Yeah.
Oh, until the job's done, really, until your horse is going well, I would say.
You're but not to stop just... them to stop them being a to stop them being a sticky loader, or because Rob is hard, you know.
You've got to give him the best experience, and you've got to I would suggest always taking a professional advice on it, because as I say, it could be so complex. Loading, again, it's a really complex thing. There could be so many reasons why, and that's why I do a consultation now, because I need to go and see somebody. Will say to me, oh, I've got a problem with this, it's only this. And you get down there and it's not what they've said at all. It's completely different.
Okay, take this for example then. A lot of horses kick. What would be their reasons? Let's take Blackjack. Blackjack kicks. Yes, he, granted, he did have one traumatic experience. He was an amazing loader. He went to the vets. He had loads of injections. He had a horrific day. He didn't want to get in the lorry on the way back. Fair enough. He's tired. He's had enough. He just wanted everyone to leave him alone. Sadly, I was using a professional transporter.
Okay, yeah.
And they had this genius idea of putting long lines behind him and trying to force him in with the long lines. And me being very inexperienced, my first horse, trusting the transporter, I did actually say, I'm not really sure that that would be good. He looks quite agitated. She was like, no, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. Then he rears up, all hell breaks loose. And that's it. He's been a horrific loader since. He's been completely freaked out. But over time, I've got him used to it. So we've gone in big lorries. I've used another transporter who's brilliant. We go with friends. We go with other horses. But we don't go much. So obviously, I don't go enough. And also, he kicks a lot.
Okay. What's he kicking? Whereabouts is he kicking exactly?
Back feet.
Yeah, but what for? Is it a horse going up his bottom, or is it just generally when you go near him, or is it in the trade?
No, he doesn't kick generally. He's the most placid horse ever, but it's only whenever we're travelling, which I find really bizarre, yeah. So I thought it was the boots, so I stopped travelling him with boots, and now he just kicks anyway.
Yeah, so what I would tend to do is I'd go in the back of them. You're not meant to, but I'd normally go in the back of them and say, look, if there's something as complex as this, I say, do you mind? I know you have to be careful because obviously insurances and everything, but I would like to see either on the video, which you got a video of his facial expressions, because for me, facial expressions and body language is a must. What is he kicking out of and what's he doing with his face? So for me, I'd have to see what he's doing. And then I would make a decision to see what we can do to try and train him and see what other things we can do to get that better. But I'd have to see it. And that's, again, when I do a consultation, that helps me out and say, right, okay, we're going to take this path, or this path. There's many. I had a horse in Norway that I had to train. Apparently it's quite famous. It's a Lipizzaner. And that horse there, I got there and they had many trainers try and get this on the lorry. One person, I think, succeeded getting it on, but it took them off the ramp and galloped off. They couldn't get it in. Now, that horse, the lady wanted to get it to Denmark, for example. That's where they bought their new place, in Denmark. And she wasn't going to leave Norway until that horse went to Denmark.
Yeah, of course.
Now, they tried sedating it, but they couldn't get the sedation to work. They sedated it, and it just wouldn't move. It just go rigid, and they couldn't get it up the ramp then. So they failed every time they tried, and they tried a new horse trainer each year that failed. Now, I tried something very different for that horse, and I found out once I was in there that the horse, his heartbeat was, you could dance to the beat of it, and it was once he got it on and he could hear it, and it was nothing to do with loading. The actual ramp had no problem whatsoever. Once it was in there, it was claustrophobic and it just couldn't cope with it. So funny enough, I did was turn wait till it got dark and turn the indoor lights off and turn the lights off onto the lorry on, put the horse on and loaded up fine, and the heartbeat went down.
How weird. Why was that then?
Well, light at the other end of the tunnel, I guess. But that's an example. So it could see, because inside the lorry it was white. Mm-hmm. Everything else around it was dark, so it couldn't see. It looked more spacious, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was going on. So I thought, claustrophobic, it needs more space. How can I make it look more space? It's already white. Turn the lights off in the indoor. Turn the lights on in the horse box, and it went straight up and in. Heartbeat went down, perfectly fine. So once that horse was in, it had some issues. I mean, it's been terribly worked over the years. I mean, I did get told beforehand that when they tried to get it in the trailer before, they used a boat wrench and wrenched it in with a boat wrench. Boats in. So it's been very, very badly worked. And I just figured out what the problem was and said, look, this horse has got major claustrophobic problems. Once that horse is on the trailer, I would suggest it probably, because not every horse you can fix completely. They needed that horse over to Denmark, and I said the best way you're going to do it, I figured it out, it's got claustrophobic, it's claustrophobia, it's not the full ticket on that, and it's never going to be correct unless you're going to have a very big box to load it up on. Then you may have a chance, but at the moment you just smash everything to bits. Maybe in time, in training with me, we'll get him over it, but you could dance to his heartbeat. Once they put the lights on in the trailer, and he was on, everything calmed down. They could then, if they wanted to, get the vet in and do what needs to be done to then transport that horse. I wouldn't recommend traveling that horse really myself, because it needs a lot of work. But at least I found out what the problem was.
Yeah.
Where their mind was, it won't go up the ramp. No, that's not the problem at all. They've got another one. I mean, I've done many horses that people have been blamed for, and actually, it's not their fault. We're talking about loading. I figured out one horse was the reason why he was falling over. He was looking out of the window through the where he could see, and he was just watching the trees go backwards and forwards, back and forwards. Bang! And it fainted. But half a ton animal fainting.
Oh my gosh.
No fun whatsoever. But you have to get in the back, and you're watching the facial movements, and you're thinking, right, and the body, and what they're doing, where are they looking? And this horse, every time, was looking out, doing this, the tricks.
Looking bang, side to side, watching them go past.
1 to 2 minutes of doing this, he'll be on the floor. But you cover the windows, fine.
Do you know, Rob, it makes so much sense. I'm stuck for words. You look at it from a completely different angle. So we always look at it, it's what's its history, what's happened to it, why is it traumatized, is there a reason? But we never look at the reason as something being as simple as it looking at the trees.
Yeah, but it just got dizzy.
Yeah.
You shut the window up and that horse was fine. But it just kept looking. No, you wouldn't find that out unless you got in the back with it.
Mm.
And no training will set you up for that. I mean, you can load that horse all day long if you wanted to, but it's always going to faint looking out the window.
So, do you have a main reason as to why horses kick when they're traveling?
Yeah, it's frustration. You know, it being off balance, depending how close the partitions are. There's all things I would check. Is there enough space? Are they sweating up? Again, I can't give you an answer to it, because there's so many answers, and we'll be going
round so many circles.
Yeah, yeah, we'll go circles so many times, and that's the game. I have a consultation, and even still, when I have a client come to me, they're on trial for a week or two. I mean, I don't tell them they're on a trial, but they'll be on a trial with me, one for the horse. But also for themselves, because I'll be watching how they are and what they do every day and how they go. Like, for example, again, we go back to the loading. It's a big one, especially with green horses. What are they doing before they go to the competition or to the show? How are they reacting?
Mm.
Most of them, get that in there, get the husband out screaming and shouting at the husband because he hasn't done this right. Everything's in the air because they're late for their show. And what is the stress level? The horse is going, not quite sure what's going on. And then again, they go up to the trader. They're late already. They're not prepped, and the horse won't go on. So the stress level's up high anyway. When if they took their time and packed properly and got up at the right reasonable time, then for that green horse, they'd have made it a lot nicer.
There's another interesting thing I heard before, which I've tried to take that view. Is anything that you'd normally do before a competition, you do it anyway. So the platting, the giving them a bath, the extra grooming that you do, anything that's different that you'd have to do it for the week running up to it. And okay, it's more time, but then they just think, oh, I'm being groomed again, it's not the end of the world. Oh, I'm being platted today, it's not the end of the world. Maybe it's because I suffer from anxiety. I realize that they, you know, I don't want to do anything that makes them more anxious. But a very scary thing, Rob, is taking your horse out, loading it, taking it out for the first time.
Yes, again, and that's where all the anxiety is, and you've got to have a good structure. You can't just go out there and not have a plan. If you just go out there and not have a plan, and you're not used to being in this environment, yeah, you're going to probably create some problems, especially with green young horses. With an old timer, no, he's been there, done it, and you'll be okay. Some horses, as I say, they can change as they're older, and you're with them and you go to a show, and if you have someone nervous holding them all the time, they will pick up on that. Horses will take off of you, is what I'm trying to say. You know, they will take off of you. They're looking at you. They're always looking at you to read you, talk to you, and work you out. That's their form of communication. They're looking at your body language all the time. So it's really important to try and learn some.
Are you this good with humans?
No. No, I don't have so much time for them. But no, you do. It comes with the job. You're not just working with a horse. You're working with a person as well. Mm. And there's so much to it. There is so much. And obviously, once you've done that, especially for the backing, you'll back a horse and you're getting it ready and you're training it and it's going right. And more so for rebackers, if a horse has come in from another yard, I've got a couple in at the moment, and they've been there 1-2 months or so, and they've not been able to get a bridle on or a saddle on, or I have got that far, and they've got on them, they've been chucked off a few times, and they go, no, this horse is unsuitable to ride. And then they go, right, I'm going to give it one more shot and come over here. I prefer they just came here anyway, but if they did come over and you're like, right, okay, you look at the training and you've got to say, okay, most people that are in the game are pretty good at what they do. You've got to take your hat off to the top trainers. The reason why they're top trainers is because they are good at what they do. Mm. But when they bring a horse over to me and say, look, this horse isn't going so well, or our client's been to there first, and they bring it to me and I'm like, well, you know it's going to be hard. You know it's going to be difficult because they've done anything they can to get this fixed, or try to do the best they can in their groundwork or their ridden to do the best they can for the horse and their name, of course, before sending it over. So you know when you get a horse in, it's going to be hard if it's come off another trainer. And it's not only going to be hard there, you've got to then start to retrain it. And once you're getting on it, and I've built up the bond and trust from me, maybe that there's damage along the line that it needs more than one person to ride it, especially if it's a rebreak. So I'll have to ride it, and then I have to try sort of mummy somebody else onto it as such and try and train them not to do anything silly, because they'll get on them. Like I had one a week ago that had some issues, and I had to get the rider on. And it was a beautiful show of what had happened in its past to how I rode it, and then getting someone new on it. His tail was going 100 mile an hour when I rode it, walk, trot, canter, fine, lovely.
Wow.
You take it out hacking on the road and I'll be fine. You wouldn't even know. I got the next rider on, tail was a bit wishy and it looks a bit nervous, and you think, well, it shouldn't be like that. But it always remembers what happened to it. It will take a little while to get that out of its system. So it's keeping people safe as much as possible. And when you unclip that clip and you're just hoping that they're not going to do anything silly or or do something they shouldn't. Luckily, ladies don't do anything they shouldn't do, and they normally take it quite quite steady. But when you get a lad on it, they think, great, we're going to go a bit faster or whatever. So you have to be careful with the lads. You have to clip them up and just say, really put it into them, this horse had some issues, just chill out and try and work on them.
Yeah. Gosh, Rob, there's only one of you, sadly.
Well, there is some guys out there that are doing a good job and showing off some good stuff. You know, there is a couple of other people. We are limited in England of the trainers, but there is a couple out there that might be slightly different to my work. They may go... What I find over here, there's a lot of YouTube trained trainers, which is annoying, very annoying. And a lot of people, you have to be really careful in this job that when you do teach someone, that when you show them to load their horse or show them how to do something, that they don't go, right, okay, start up a business next door trying to do the same thing. That's quite difficult. So I'm solo. I go on my own. I try to tell people, don't listen. If they're saying they're using my techniques, they use the technique that I showed them on their individual horse at that time. That might change. You know, each horse is different. And we have in England, just getting onto our breeding, we've got so many different breeds here in England. And that's why I said my training is changing all the time. Like in Australia and New Zealand, when I'm working horses, their breeds are not like ours over here. We're a small island with many different breeds. Cobs, we have a lot of them. Warm bloods, thoroughbreds. I'll go out and probably see six different breeds in a day. That not one of them was the same.
Yeah, I know.
And when I was working in New Zealand, four or five of them exactly the same. You may get the one different one. Mm-hmm. So each horse that I train now, I look at them and think, right, okay, that might need a little bit of this, that might need a little bit of that. And it's more so than it would be over there when I was working.
So what we really need, though, Rob, is we need a load of mini-me's that you actually train people, and they're actually trained by Rob Leese, because you are miles away from many of us. So up north, you know, they're very lucky because they have you on their doorstep. But further, you know, south of Birmingham.
How far north do you think I am?
Where are you then?
Not far from Northampton, Milton Keynes.
Yes, that's miles away. That might as well be in the back end of nowhere for people in Cornwall.
I cover Northampton, Milton Keynes, Bedford, Peterborough, Cambridge, even Hertfordshire. So, you know, sort of Hitchin, Baldock, all those areas. I go within sort of from Kimbolton about 40, 50 mile radius. But anything more than that, I go for half day or a day. And I was in Scotland last year. Norway last year. I was filming over in Spain, Game of Thrones last year. Oh, wow. So I do travel a lot. I'm all over the place.
Well, I think you should do a little tour. I think there should be a Rob Leese tour where you start at the south and go from Land's End to Jonas. Where is it? What is it? Land's End, John O'Groats?
Yeah, go all the way around England.
Yeah.
Follow the sea round or follow the beaches. Yeah. No, funny you say that. I was going to this year start making and small documentary, really, of whereabouts I'm going and film it all, but bits and pieces that you do, and that's going to start soon. I bought all the equipment to be able to do small little and stick them all together towards the end, doing a little film of what part you do, and I'll have that on YouTube and Facebook as well.
Oh, well, before you clip it all together, you should send us the sections, and as you're going on your journey, we can put them out on Horse Hour.
Yeah, well, yeah, you could do that. That'd be good fun.
And then you can watch
the
whole thing on your YouTube account when you get to the end of the year. I'd love to follow your journey, because you get so many different scenarios, and we're like sponges, Rob. We want to learn. I mean, I would, oh my goodness, if I was anywhere near Milton Keynes, I would be at your place this weekend going, I want to see, I want to learn. Because ultimately, I think most of us want... And I say this a lot, they want not only the best for our horses, we know that, but we want to learn so that we can make everything easier for them.
Yes.
Now, I might not have a behaviour issue, I might not have a difficult horse, but I know that... Okay, so I want you to come to my yard this weekend because I'm loading Blackjack and I want to make sure that it's safe for him, and I want to make sure that moving forward I don't have any problems. So I need about 10 of you to spread you all across the country.
Well, I don't think I want 10 of me. The world can only just about handle one of me. Yeah.
But is there ways that we can get in touch if maybe we're not that close to you?
I do clinics and demonstrations, and you can send horses here up to me as well. So we have a yard here at Tilbrook in Kimbolton. So it's between it's near Huntingdon actually, and yeah,
nice part of the world.
We take horses in here. And then I travel up and down different places within an hour, really, 40 minutes to an hour. And then all over the country, I'll do clinics and demonstrations. I go up to Wales a lot, South Wales, and do clinics there.
Great. When's your next demo?
My next demo is, we're sitting down actually, and we've got to discuss that. What's happened? There's so much work has been coming in at the moment that it's getting to the point where I need to sit down with them and say, well, I need a demonstration, but what day can we put it on?
Oh.
So it's getting like that. It's like, where can we put a demonstration on? Which is good, really. It's nice that people enjoy the work that you do, and that are wanting to learn on their horses. As I say, I don't teach people to go out and teach other people, because I've had a horse background and I've lived with so many of these horses. My family had 50 and then they had 62, I believe, at one point. And I grew up with them, working with them. I was born in Chesant, and we had a yard down there at Goff's Oak, which I think we had a small holding there, but we used to rent fields as well. We had 12 acres, and I think we rented another 24 acres elsewhere in Ware. And I don't remember a day where there wasn't horses. When I couldn't ride, my dad and mum was driving, and I was sat as a child on the back of a car. So and there was horses that has been a natural progression, really, for me. It's just even when I go on holiday, it seems to be a horse gets in the way. I went to America and went to Lake Tahoe. Is it Lake Tahoe?
Mm-hmm. Whereabouts?
Over in the States, I think it's Lake Tahoe. I went to skiing, and I got a phone call up on the mountain by my mum and said, "There's some people down the bottom in California. Would you go and do some lessons with them down there?" I said, "No, I'm on a holiday." They were pleased because one of them at the time was a polo horse that really needed some looking out. I did it all for free because you don't work out there. So I just went down there and went, okay, I'll do that. But I needed to pick up some saddles at the time. I didn't know where to pick these Western saddles up. And they said, if you look at that horse for me, we'll take you around and pick up these saddles.
Oh, so brilliant.
I went and looked at the horse and I said, right, you need to do this, 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 and this. And they give me a call and said, brilliant. Was on it within a week, and the issues that it had are all gone, and now we're out playing polo with it. So fantastic, really. But I got to, every time I go on holiday, there's something that goes on. So I try and find an island now where
you can actually have some peace and quiet.
Yeah,
but do you just ride Western then? Do you ride English too?
I don't ride Western at all, really. It's
what did you want the Western saddles for then?
I like them when I'm backing horses. I start off with an English saddle and maybe a roller, depending on which horse is, what horse I'm using. But I like to put the Western saddle on just before I get on them because it's got 2 cinches, so it's got 2 girths. That's where my leg might go backwards onto the girth there. Now, the Western saddle, it weighs about 2.5, 3 stone. So for me, putting something on that's heavy, that feels like it's got a bit of weight to it rather than a half stone English saddle, which is no good to me at all. Also, if I put the Western saddle, I can use the saddle in so many different ways that it feels like you're getting on and you can rock and shake the saddle so much better. Also, when you get on them, the weight is all over the back. You know, it's not just in one place. And I just really like the way the saddle sits on the horses just to get on them for the first time. Mm. Once that's... But don't get me wrong, when I travel abroad, I can't take Western saddles, so I back them in English saddles. I don't just rely on my gear, but if I have to, then if you ask me a personal choice, then I would choose the Western saddle to back horses.
That's really interesting, because the Western saddles are really heavy. So
perfect, yeah, perfect.
That's good, as I wasn't sure if it would almost hurt the horse, because they're young, they're not fully developed, having such a heavy thing on their back.
No, because I put it on first. I take it off when I go riding, but I put it on first and use it because it's got 2 cinches, a horn that you can move to the side, so you can use it within your groundwork. Secondly, it's had a bit of weight on their back first. So this is where people go wrong, is they stick an English saddle on, which is, don't get me wrong, there's loads of people backing just in English saddles. I do myself. But if you put the English saddle on and get on, and they haven't had no movement in the saddle, it's only half a stone, and it doesn't weigh nothing. Then you go and stick 8, 9, whatever stone, 10 stone person on, you're going to have fireworks because suddenly it's got weight on their back. They've never had weight on their back, so why don't you put some weight on their back before so they get to feel what it feels like? And the Western saddle's perfect because it's not going to be like a load of sandbags moving left and right and messing up the muscles. It's going to sit. It's perfectly made to sit on a horse's back already, so it's fitted. So
I
go put some weight on the horse's back first so it gets used to it. And it can also train walk, trot, canter with some weight on its back rather than you getting on it, it's never had any weight on the back, and then boom, you're off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for me, this is a better way of working. And I always come back to the English saddle because I don't really like riding the Western saddles as much.
Really? Why is that then?
I prefer an English dressage saddle personally. Because
I love that. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, because after you've backed them, you then start to do other things with them, like you've got walk, trot, canter transitions, and you start their schooling and the rest of their life. So for me, with an English saddle and an English dressage saddle or just a dressage saddle, I find it a lot nicer to be in it all day long, really, than a Western saddle. I know other people would argue that, but to train them for English riders, then you have to go where everyone else is.
See, I'd love to have a Western saddle with English stirrups and maybe not ride so long, maybe ride just a little shorter, because I love the comfort of the Western saddle. I love my dressage. I mean, I am live in my dressage saddle.
Yeah, funny you say that. My Western saddle has English stirrups on it. Yeah, so I don't like the clumsiness and of the side of having the Western saddle, and I don't ride in spurs, so I don't want all that leather and everything around me. So I take them off and just put some English stirrups on. As I say, I don't ride in spurs anyway. So for me, I find that the Western saddle, if you have big, heavy, the heavy stirrups, it's just, you have to get a really expensive saddle for them to be really nice in the stirrups. Because they, even I bought £1,000 secondhand Western saddle, and it's worth quite a lot of money. And those stirrups on that are horrendous. So you really need to know whereabouts you're buying. And being English, if you're buying a Western saddle, you've got to go to America. Mm. And you've got to be able to think, right, I'm going to put my hand in a pocket and spend a lot of money on the Western saddle. Because if you think about it, you see a load on eBay for like 120 quid, 150 quid. Well, you never even, if you think about it, think of how much it weighs. As you said, 2.5, 3 stone. Now, can you buy the leather to even make that saddle? The answer is no. So you're not going to get a decent saddle for that price. You need to be in the thousands to get a decent saddle for a Western saddle.
But going on your leather section and the stirrups, my thinking was, rightly or wrongly, I don't know, was that the horse isn't, I'm not feeling the horse. I'm not getting my legs around the horse. I love the comfort of the Western saddle. I like being held in, basically, and having something to grab hold of if I need to. And although a dressage saddle holds me in quite nicely and my position's better, ultimately, I just felt much more at ease in a Western, but still wanted to feel the horse with my legs.
It all depends on what you're doing, really, and what discipline you're doing as well. You've got to really think, right, what discipline am I doing? For me, I'm a trainer that backs horses, does remedial, problem solving, work with horses, and some form of my own style of teaching. Now, I need loads of different saddles. So I've got many different types. I've got English saddles from dressage, GPs, and jumping to Western. And I've got two Portuguese saddles. I like my Portuguese saddles too. They're quite fun. I've got a Spanish horse myself. So I haven't got a Spanish saddle, but I've got a Portuguese saddle.
Oh, nice.
I prefer the look of them.
You can have my medieval bridle. I have a medieval bridle that stayed in the cupboard for like 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's my kind of, being a lad as well, I prefer to have something that looks a little bit different.
You're not a showman? Surely, no. Rob, no way, no.
No, I don't want to go around in, I want to go around looking like I'm in a film, I guess.
Well, listen, you know, I can speak to you for hours and hours and hours, but sadly, we haven't got 3 weeks. So can we follow you? We can follow you on Facebook where we can see all your videos.
Yeah, Facebook. You got YouTube as well. There's a few just gone up recently, some new ones that have gone up.
Are you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter, but I'm not really using it at the moment. I don't understand it, to be honest with you. I've gone on, this is my third attempt of Twitter, and I just look at it and think, it's very, very difficult. Maybe someone sat down and showed me how to use it, I'll be better with it. But I just about get Facebook. I'm an outdoor person. I'm outside with horses all the time. So Facebook is about as much as I can do.
So how can we follow you on Facebook?
I've got a page. The page is at the moment Robert Lee's Horses. And then I've got my Facebook, my personal, well, it's not personal, it's a work one as well. It's Rob Lee's Horses. So it's the same.
Basically. So you've got two. And what's your website address?
It's www.roblees.com.
And what is your Twitter handle?
I wouldn't be able to tell you.
I'm going to find out, because I think we should all bombard you on Twitter and start following you, because then you can get involved in Horse Hour on a Monday night.
I'll see if I'm on Twitter as well. Maybe
you
I am.
Better be Rob Lees.
I am on it, but I don't know which one. There might be two coming up. So one of them I don't use at all. Somebody made it for me. And then there's one that I think I've got.
Rob Lees Jones. Rob Lees. Pro Horsemanship.
No, not that one. That's an old one. That's somebody made me that, and I don't use that at all.
RL Horsemanship 1. Working with foals up to ridden, working on film sets with horses.
That might be it.
Okay. So on Twitter, you are at RL Horsemanship 1. You got 17 followers, Rob. Right, we need to get that up, please. Follow you on Twitter. You now have 18.
I told you I don't don't really use it. It's just, it's very complicated, but I will start looking into it. There's so many social media sites at the moment that you'd be on there all day if you and that's the problem. That, luckily now I have people that are helping me out with this, so I should be able to get onto it.
Well, you can get involved on Horse Hour on Twitter on a Monday night. It's between 8 and 9, and all you do is use the hashtag Horse Hour, and then you can see other people's conversations, see what everyone's talking about, and get involved. And I think, oh my gosh, you'd be hounded, I'm sure. People would have so many questions for you. Join us on Twitter. It would be lovely.
Yes, I will do. I will take another look into it and see if I can get somebody to explain the Twitter sphere for me.
Now, we've literally talked for ages, but it's great. I'm sorry for taking up so much of your time, but it really has been fascinating.
That's fine. That's great. This evening has been it's been brilliant. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. You can catch up with all previous episodes of the Horse Hour podcast on our website. Just head to horsehour.co.uk. And as I'm sure you know already, we've got our education hub there and lots of videos too. This weekend, we're heading to the National Dressage Championships over at Hartbury College to see all the top riders compete. And it's going over 4 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday. And I'll be there doing some interviews and taking some photos for you so that even if you can't be there, you can still stay up to date. Just follow us on Twitter at Horse Hour, and everything will be on our website too. If you're heading to the Dressage Championships, then drop me a message and it would be lovely to see you. And if you're riding, then we can take some photos and talk about your experience. And whatever you're doing with your horse this week, I hope you really enjoy it. And don't forget to tag us in your photos at Horse Hour. I'm at Amy Stevenson 1 on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Hope you have a good week with your horse, and I'll speak to you soon.
You've been listening to Horse Hour. Join the community on Twitter Mondays 8 p.m. UK time, 3 p.m. Eastern, by using the hashtag Horse Hour. Follow Amy at Amy Stevenson 1 and subscribe to us on Acast, iTunes, Stitcher and Player FM.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.